You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. For our contemporary affairs section today, I want to play an audio clip. So here we go, and then I'll make some comments on it.
Establishments like it. She was locked away. She was hidden. She had nobody there for her. She was crying. She was scared every single moment. And because her usefulness had run out, she was going to be killed. Someone was going to murder her. And I can see you smiling, and I can see you laughing. But to her, this is not funny. I went in there with other humans, and I took her out of there. And if I hadn't, she wouldn't be with me right now. She would be gone, just like all of her sisters, just like everybody who we left behind. And I'm here to tell you today that all of those other girls, but everyone who we left behind, they just wanted to live too, and they deserve their lives. And right now, their eggs and their milk and their bodies are on plates inside this restaurant, and that is so unfair to them.
Okay, from a Christian worldview perspective, the problem here is obvious. This woman is equating that of a chicken, and if you didn't figure it out, snow is a chicken, with that of humans. Okay, the fundamental presupposition from her perspective, and she probably doesn't even know this, is that she is fundamentally a Darwinist. Okay, she's equating there's really no difference between humans and chickens. And therefore, we should put a chicken or a pig or anything on the same level as humans. From a Christian worldview perspective, we are obviously, as humans, made in the image of God. We are to be wise stewards of creation. We're not to be distinctly cruel to animals or even, you know, treat them poorly or mismanage them. In fact, I'll even tell you this, from a thinking about just food and our animal confinement methodology that is largely used today, I find it reprehensible. I don't like it. It's abusive of animals. They're treated poorly. They're filled with chemicals and medicines and everything else that genetically modified to grow as fast as possible. You know, and if you take some of the chicken varieties now, beyond 6 or 8 weeks, they can't even stand up, and I find that terrible. I'm certainly not someone who thinks that animals are to be abused or anything like that. Again, we are to be wise stewards of animals. We are to take responsibility, and I do think that we should raise them differently for our food, and it's much healthier that way. For many reasons, but to equate a chicken to that of a human being is terribly anti-Christian, terribly anti-biblical. For today's topic, we're going to discuss basic preparedness. All right, we're not going into great detail on all the scenarios that could come up, but just basic preparedness on some of the more common things that could happen in our lives, whether it's we lose our job, or actually the most common thing is a house fire that could be a disaster to us. So hopefully you're prepared in that regard. Do you have fire extinguishers in your home? Do you have a plan to deal with that? Do you have insurance to replace your home, or renter's insurance for your goods at the very least? But again, we're going to talk about basic preparedness, and it's important to discuss the goal. And I think a couple of good reasons why we prepare is that it reduces the stress in our life, hopefully. I mean, if you obsess over it or worry about it too much, then that may not be the case. But in a lot of times when we are prepared, we don't stress out as much over those things. That isn't of course, if we're not just blindly oblivious to the things that are going on around us. So if, we do understand that there are things that we need to prepare for, so it's important that we discuss those things. Another really important reason for preparedness is to develop resilient lives. I think this is really important. And there's a lot of aspects to it, not just, some type of survival situation, the zombie apocalypse or something like that. When I talk about resiliency, I give you a couple examples that if you get into a fight with your wife and you're practically on the verge of divorce, you are not resilient in your life. If your car breaks down and a $1,000 repair breaks you, or and it spins you into a full-fledged emergency, or you gotta go into debt to get it fixed, you're not resilient in your life. If you lose your job and you're immediately in real bad trouble, you're not resilient in your life. So see, these are some of the things that we want to alleviate. It allows us to live less stressful lives. So resiliency is a very important thing for us. And again, I like to use the analogy of that car repair, that if we are resilient, that $1,000 fix for the car is no longer an emergency. It's simply something that just comes up and we deal with. We don't necessarily like, paying the $1,000 repair, but we do it and we're good. Okay, so I want to talk about a few of those things here today. Well, one thing is with regards to preparedness is the what I like to call the timeline of a task. So if the timeline in which you accomplish something, whether that's to prepare for something or to establish an emergency fund or whatever it is, the timeline on which you do that determines on whether or not it's just simply a task or it becomes an emergency. All right, so we can think of something that maybe it's a deadline at work. If we procrastinate and procrastinate, all of a sudden it becomes an emergency and we're knocking it out in full stress mode, as opposed to just knocking out the task, doing the task, whatever, even if it's a project where we're accomplishing things slowly over time. Well, that's just simply something that we're doing on a day-to-day basis that allows us to not go into emergency mode. We want to avoid emergency mode. That is, after all, what we should be preparing for is to alleviate these emergencies, or when they do occur, we respond well. Another helpful way to think about preparedness is in the aspect of most likely occurrences and most dangerous occurrences. So, like I said before, some of the most likely disasters to hit you personally in your life are something like a house fire or getting injured, especially if you are dependent upon, say, is that you work for yourself or you're in, your physical health is dependent on, or your livelihood is dependent on your physical health. Some of those things where it is very important to do that, to be prepared. Some of the other more likely scenarios, like I said, house fire, injury, loss of a job, basic power outages. These are common occurrence. These are the most likely, quote unquote, disasters that will strike you personally. And it's also important to note that, if you're walking around and everything's going well in your life, well, guess what? Person standing right next to you might be having one of their own emergencies or their own disasters to strike them personally. So a lot of times we try and, we think of these large scale disasters. We think of a total economic collapse, the zombie apocalypse, these types of things. When in reality, that's not the most likely thing to happen. And personal disasters occur all the time. So again, most likely. Most dangerous are these things. It's the worst case scenarios. It's the Ebola outbreak that actually goes viral. It goes airborne, it becomes truly a pandemic where 25%, 30% of the population dies. Something like that would just be utterly terrible. But that is not as likely as a personal disaster hitting you. With that in mind, I just, you know, have been following the Ebola crisis. And I think it's important that we keep it in its proper balance. So a few things just of note with the Ebola situation. We need to watch it closely. We shouldn't be panicking. We certainly shouldn't be just straight up trusting whatever comes out of the mouth of the CDC or the government. They've already proven to give us false information, to not take reasonable procedures. I don't want to see this turn into something that, again, restricts liberty, but reasonable procedures. For example, why were we even accepting flights from significant outbreak countries? Things like that. The other thing that we can do, besides watching it closely, is things like building your immune system. And again, will you be worse off if you trying to build your immune system because you're preparing for Ebola and it never happens? Well, of course not. I mean, building our immune system is a great just way to live. So we should be building our immune system, eating healthy, those types of things. That's always a good idea. Also, it doesn't hurt to have masks on hand in case this, you know, in a low percentage case that it does become a serious pandemic. At some point, if that happens, you'll have no choice but to self-quarantine. Maybe it's your entire family is not going to leave the house for some undetermined period of time. So, you know, should you have food and water storage if there's a serious disruption like that? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's important. But again, we just need to think of these things, and what will help help frame it for us is to think of it in these most likely and most dangerous situations. So with that in mind, I want to approach this with just a couple helpful ideas when it comes to basic preparedness. And again, we go into this with the assumption that we're looking at the basics, we're looking at these most likely occurrences, but even if we're preparing for worst case scenarios, it should add to our life, and that should be kind of a something we think of. You know, even if I do store food, I should store food in a manner that I will use it. Okay, you don't want to store a bunch of things that you actually won't use, because there's nothing wrong with storing food, and you know, in fact, just as a simple inflation hedge, storing food is a good idea, because the reality is food's probably going to be more expensive next year. Especially with things like the drought that's occurring in California, even if it's things like that that cause prices of vegetables or beef to go up, us storing certain types of foods is not a bad idea. So let's get into it. A helpful way to think of this is the rules of three, and you've probably heard of it before, but let's talk about it. So the rules of three. You can go 3 hours without shelter. And so let's then morph this into basic preparedness. Well, we could look at this from a wilderness perspective in a survival situation, or we could think of it in our home. If you have a power outage, do you have the ability to provide alternative heat? Things like that, especially if you're in a cold climate. If you're not in a cold climate, then maybe this isn't what you're worried about. When we were in Okinawa, Japan, it was more of an issue of staying cool rather than staying warm. But nonetheless, shelter, a good appropriate shelter, whether it's heated or cool. Do you have an alternate way? If you're in a cold climate, do you have a wood stove? Do you have a good source of wood? Do you have wood stored up for the winter? Are you prepared for that? Things like that. The next rule of three is water. So you can go 3 days without water. Again, we're using this wilderness survival paradigm to talk about basic preparedness. Well, if we combine that, if we have a source of water storage, this is a good idea, but can you filter it? You know, we have a Berkey. We're on our second Berkey. And the only reason we went from a big Berkey to a Royal Berkey is because we went from three kids to seven kids in a short period of time. So we had to increase our ability to filter water. So that is a great gravity-fed filter. It requires no power. You just dump water on the top. It filters through. The filters are excellent. They last for thousands of gallons, and you have to just kind of figure out what your daily usage of water is, calculate it out, and have extra filters on hand. So this is just a great tool that I could take if I had to. I could take pond water. I could take rainwater. I could put it in the Berkey, and I could have clean, fresh drinking water. So this is an important thing. But there's also the idea of running your home off of water. The average family uses 400 gallons, and this is a family of four. If you're a family of eight, double that. But the average family of four uses 400 gallons a day. A lot of that is on flushing. Obviously, a lot of that is on bathing, and then drinking water. You know, they always say 1 gallon per person per day, but think about that for a minute. That's not going to take you very far. That will only get you drinking water and maybe something like a sponge bath. So a simple solution for water storage would be something like the bathtub containers that they have, just the plastic, basically large bags that are designed to fit in a bathtub. They'll hold 100 gallons of water. That's great. I mean, that's, figure if you're able to do that, a family of four, 25 gallons each person at 1 gallon per day, that's, 25 days worth of water storage in an emergency situation. That would be pretty bad. Or that water could, at the very least, could be used to help flush a toilet, for example. So water preparedness is crucial. Other ways to store water, rainwater catchment, great idea, especially if you have gardens, things like that, especially if you're running a homestead. We talked about this in episode 4 in depth, but running ponds, rainwater catchment, having a backup power source for your well, these types of things are crucial. And it doesn't matter if you're just talking about a simple power outage or a massive Ebola outbreak. Okay, so even pond water can be run through a Berkey and can be drank. Now, I would probably use some type of natural filter first and then run it through a Berkey, whether it's different layers of earth, sand, moss, things like that. I'd probably run it through that first, then I'd run it through the Berkey in order to drink it. But certainly I would shower with rainwater and things like that. You can obviously store water and simply in whether they're your 5 gallon water jugs or anything like that, or do something very simple like get 2 liter bottles, empty 2 liter bottles of soda. And if you don't drink soda, which we don't, grab them from someone who does. I guarantee you there's people that you know that are going through two liter bottles of soda regularly. Grab a bunch of those, wash them out really well, put a couple drops of bleach in there, rinse them extremely well, fill them with water, seal them, and off you go. You can put together a pretty good water storage real quickly and real cheaply. You'd want to set up some type of system of changing out that water on a periodic basis, not because water goes bad, but because of bacteria that may get in there, and that would be the only reason. The other thing you could do is you could add a drop or two of bleach in there if necessary. I would just change them out more often than not. And then the other rule of three is 3 weeks without food. And so this gets into kind of a basic food storage. And probably one of the easiest ways to start storing food. And again, this is a good idea. This is just how people used to live. You know, we tend to look at people who store food and say they're tinfoil hat wearers and this kind of thing, but it just makes sense. And it's a hedge against inflation, and it's a hedge against an Ebola outbreak, and it's just a smart idea. And the simplest way to do that would be just to buy a little bit extra of the food you already eat. So if you did a and kept a food log, for example, for a month, it would tell you what you're actually spending your money on as far as food goes. And it would, you know, you would probably be surprised by it. You probably, if somebody asked you, well, what do you eat? You'd probably say one thing, and if you were able to have this food log, you'd probably be surprised at the types of things that you're actually eating. So, for example, if you eat a lot of canned food, just buying extra canned food of what you already eat is a great idea. And if you have a relatively small family, you can actually build up a food larder pretty quickly. Another thing you can do as far as food is to go ahead and shop at some of the big box stores. That's the Costcos, things like that, where you can buy bulk. That'd be kind of the next step, going from buying extra food of what you already buy to buying more in bulk. Above that, which I think is a great thing in what we do, simply because we have a lot of people in our family, but also for a little bit of food storage, is we buy in bulk. We find co-ops. We'll buy bulk grains, for example, in 50-pound bags, things like that. So there are those things around you. You just have to go out and find them. You can certainly get into going in on, for example, a cow with two or three other families or one other family, whatever size, and you know, and adding that to your freezer. Of course, if you lose power, there's always the risk of that. But interestingly, that's why people used to do all their butchering as winter approached, so that they could use the winter to their advantage to store food. Like I said, the first thing is put together a quick kit, with those things. Maybe you start with a 72-hour kit of extra food besides what you already have in your counter or in your food storage. So if at any one time in your food storage you have enough food for, say, 4 or 5 days, remember, if power goes out, you will lose your refrigerated food within a day or two, for those things that actually need to be refrigerated, but that's a whole other topic. Then you'll lose your frozen food maybe a couple days after that, unless it's winter and you're able to take advantage of that. But besides all that, having a 72-hour kit and then building from there. I personally don't think a 72-hour kit is adequate, but you've got to start somewhere. That's not a bad place to start. You know, all of the most likely scenarios, the power going out for a couple days, then you'll be just fine. So you have that. The other thing that I recommend is that you're able to store food that you've actually grown. I mean, this gets into a whole new topic, but if you can even just grow a little bit of your own food, it's very helpful. Not just for food storage, but gaining those skills. So in the end, if something terrible were to happen again, going into the most dangerous type scenarios, if you lost or went through your food storage, how would you survive? If the trucks stop, if the ships stop, the food supply stops, and we're so dependent on that. It's really important for you to do those things, to store your own food and grow your own food. If nothing else, it's to build those skills, and that is an important thing, of just gaining that experience and knowledge, and store your own grow your own food. So if I can give you just a few more suggestions, and again, that's track what you're buying for food, well, in spending in general. That's a whole nother topic, and it's a good idea to track what you spend so you can see what you're, but specifically for this topic, track what you're eating, and start making those small changes to help you be more prepared. Do you have a basic blackout kit, a lights out kit? Do you have a flashlight that's available, or are you going to be fumbling for a flashlight? Do you have a basic first aid kit? We talked about the easy way to start gaining a food storage, just grabbing extra of canned goods that you already use and putting them in place, making sure that you cycle through them properly. Watch the expiration dates, even though I don't fully buy expiration dates, but it's a good guide to start with. If you are thinking to yourself, well, I don't really have the money to start doing food storage, well, then you need to look for ways to do it because it's that important. So look for ways to cut your expenses or at least reduce them. Build that 72-hour kit right off the bat. Start thinking about, at the very least, is storing water or having a plan to store water. So that 100 gallons in the bathtub is a great way to start. So that's just a small plastic bag that fits under the cupboard. But again, that's not on hand. That's you have to actually have the ability to be able to fill that. In fact, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a 100 gallons of water, that simple bag. I recommend also that you would acquire a couple of FRS or GMRS handheld radios. Always a good thing to have for you and your family as a backup. Cell phones go down again. We were just talking regular storms, those types of things. Have a couple of radios on hand. Have a way, a backup power source to be able to charge those radios. You don't need a whole lot to be able to charge those radios, whether it's just an extra battery with a small solar panel or something like that, that you can at least charge a couple of radios, maybe charge a cell phone or a laptop. Very important. Build a basic a binder or a folder with all of your documents or in the places that you need. This is something that's overlooked. A lot of times we don't know where that stuff is, and when the time comes, we're scrambling to look for it. It should all be in one location. And I recommend building a binder and even duplicate binders that you keep in your vehicle, minus some real sensitive information, points of contact, that type of thing, with a primary and an alternate plan to meet loved ones if anything happens. And again, whether it's just a simple power outage or something much worse. You should again work your way up. Once you have that 72-hour extra kit of water and food storage, immediately start working on a 30-day supply. And you have to, you have to get there. I mean, you have to make some sacrifices to get there. Just knowing that you have at least 30 days is very helpful, and it helps you be resilient in your life. And another great idea is have the ability to learn two ways, for example, of how to preserve food. So just dehydrating food is very simple, and there's multiple ways to do that. And canning, things like that. And there's a lot of things out there that, for example, don't need to be refrigerated that we think need to be refrigerated. A great example would be if you had a source of fresh eggs. The problem is all of our commercial eggs have all been scrubbed and cleaned and washed, and so they do go bad. But if you get eggs from someone, from your neighbor, for example, who has a flock of chickens, they put a protective coating around that egg that actually will allow that egg to last a long time without refrigeration. Think you should also store up a reasonable amount of cash on hand. Don't count on the ATMs be working, like I said, even in a large storm, that kind of thing, they'll likely be down. So not a bad idea to have cash on hand or other items that can serve as cash. And just think about some of these things. Some of these action steps that we've talked about are important. They'll help to build resiliency in your life, help to lower your stress, and help you to be prepared. Think through these things in the most likely, most dangerous, according to your personal situation. And that could be any number of things. And so I hope that was helpful to you. Let me know if you have any questions or comments, or you'd like to add anything to the show. That'd be great. This concludes today's show. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria. Thank you.